Permanent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this June the 26th on the West Coast, now June the 27th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Well, as you may have seen, all that's going on in the world now is the passing of Michael Jackson. And it stinks to high heaven. He was on a number of drugs, and word has it that he received an injection which caused him to go into cardiac arrest. Now, how soon after that injection, I don't know. That's what's being reported, of course. We can trust the mainstream media to tell us exactly what's going on all the time. So let's not hold our breath too late on that one. Or too long on that one. Several individuals have said that they feel that possibly the CIA was behind the murder of Jackson, and the only reason would be to be a deflection away from what is really going on. We talk about that all the time on this show. And I decided, in light of all this wonderful news that people can get, by the way, even the sports channels are doing Michael Jackson specials. I guess being a Michael Jackson fan now is being soon. I think the only thing that hasn't touched that aspect in the programming is the Weather Channel and Home Shopping Network, but they'll catch up anyway. Oh, let's not forget about the Eternal Word Network either, by the way. I'll leave it right there. Tonight's guest is our regular Friday night guest, and he's turned out to be my co-host, especially when I get knocked off the air and he's in the middle of a long answer. He does a great job covering until we can make our connection again. He is an author, a lecturer, and a teacher, but most of all, he's a scientist and inventor extraordinaire, and he is our resident science advisor. And he's a big fan of Nikola Tesla, Victor Schauberg, and many other very accomplished scientists. And he's my good friend, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Don. How are you this evening?
I'm just doing great. What can I say? I'm filling my brain with all this Michael Jackson information. You know, I don't know what I would have done had I forgotten about the child molestation trials that occurred in February and May or March of 2005, maybe even a little bit longer than that. what do you want me to say? It's one of those news days, you know.
Yeah, well, of course they have to resurrect all that garbage, but the thing that's interesting, although unfortunate, is the fact that it does look very suspicious, you know, as you pointed out, that he would go for an injection and wind up with heart failure as a result of it.
They said that this occurred at his home, like he was receiving a visit from the doctor. And they listed 7 or 8 or 9 drugs that he was on simultaneously. The only guy I know that could pull off anything like that was Rush Limbaugh when he was in his OxyContin ordeal. And I think his hearing was so gone they had to give him a cochlear implant just to restore a certain percentage of his hearing. But he was doing, I had heard something like 1,000 hits of OxyContin a day. So you can imagine the great pressure that these people are under in performing. I mean, it's all hogwash, let me tell you. You know, when you're cut out for music, when God gives you a gift of music, You just go out and do your thing. I mean, you have to work at it, but you're not under any special kind of pressure. It's ridiculous, you know, and especially when people are paying you millions of dollars, there's no pressure at all, let me tell you. But anyway, you and I were going to talk about something else tonight, which may have something to do with this in a way. And I would just like to preface our conversation with a general remark that I had made to you and a few other people over the past week or so. And that's, you know, in pursuit of truth and doing research and looking for answers to things that are going on, we often depend upon what's published out there, what other researchers, other journalists are saying. And you've got to be very discerning, and it seems like so many people are focusing on the very unimportant stuff. And I started getting this feeling that there's not a whole lot that I'm going to go out there and read unless it's by accident. If I stumble upon something, I'm really wasting my time looking for outsiders' opinions about what's going on. It boils down, I think, to us individually figuring it out. Of course, we can talk about it. If we didn't do that, I'd have to nix this show. You know what I mean? I mean, it's pointless for us to talk about things if we're not going to arrive at any answers or discover some truth. But in general, I was getting this feeling of dissatisfaction, seeing the same things. You know, people that I consider credible researchers are echoing this mainstream mantra of a pandemic and mainstream mantra of a horrible economy and jobs being lost. And we know that's going on. That's always happened. But they're not telling us the real reasons. That's the part that ticks me off, is that the main mainstream media is lying to the masses about why these jobs are lost, and people have no clue. They really don't have any clue. And then there are a group of people, and they're amongst my friends, that are sensing that something else is going on, that we sense things on another level. And that can be explained by several or let's say by describing several processes that are going on, particularly in the universe and in this galaxy and in our solar system. And I'm not speaking about global warming, and I'm not speaking about the ozone layer or the ozone holes in the atmosphere. I'm speaking more about our connection with the creation and the fact that some of us are transcending this third dimension in many ways, definitely in our consciousness. Now, this is not a topic for everybody, because there are some people that just don't care about this. And yet, there are people searching for answers, and I think tonight we're going to present some things that are going to lead people to some alternative ideas and answers to questions they may have. And you know, this concept of perceiving things in a reality that's been created for us, and then perceiving things in the reality that God has created, or the reality that we create. So all these different factors are interplaying with each other, and of course, multidimensionality is something very real. It's very real to you, it's very real to me, and it's very real to others that have had some experience in these areas. But how would you go about, Jim, explaining what a multidimensional existence might be for the average person out there?
Whoa. Well,
that's a heavy question, I know.
Well, it is, because you know, the unfortunate thing is that when you say the average person out there, I mean, if we use the Army's definition of average, you know, you're addressing an IQ of about 96, and that makes a very big difference in how you would present, you know, a concept to somebody who's so anchored in the three-dimensional world that they have no even perception of what may lie beyond.
Okay,
Go ahead. I was going to take a stab at it anyway. I was going to say that the best way to start, I guess, would be by comparing a living individual with a corpse. I mean, even if you're not too intelligent, you can certainly see that even though the physical vehicle is laying there, that it's not the same as it used to be. And so something has gone out of it. Something's missing from it. And, you know, with that, you could probably bring in the concept of soul and, you know, some of the other energies that are associated with a body that's living as opposed to one which has become deceased. That's how I would begin, anyway.
Okay. Now, we could approach that from a broader perspective and take into consideration all the different types of life, in the plant kingdom, in the animal kingdom, and then in the human species. Throughout nature, we have life, and we tend to focus, as a species, we focus more on ourselves. Now, I suppose that the plant kingdom focuses on itself, and the animal kingdom tends to focus on itself, and yet people are intruders, and there's something to be cautious about in terms of how animals react to people, and yet we have the same things going on amongst people, reacting to other people in a very different way. I don't think plants communicate with each other in a much different way than humans do, because plants are abiding by the laws of nature. It's inherent in them. Animals, somewhat the same thing, except when they come around people, there's this element of malevolent intention, let's say, with a lot of people. They're going after the rabbit or after the deer or after the bird or whatever, you know, to capture a trophy or a meal. And so the animal's natural enemies have expanded into other realms. Now, with people, people are afraid of what other people do to them. They look up to certain people, I think, many times for the wrong reasons. They are sold on the importance of a person through imagery, idolatry, mind control, you know, mantras about how wonderful these people are or how beautiful they are or how successful they are. And we're given these images to cause our consciousness to stay in a certain level. And then there are those that are experiencing things outside of that matrix, the way it's created for us. And they see someone like Barack Obama give a speech, and he's reading it, and he's reading it with authority, and he's got this booming voice, and he's looking from teleprompter to teleprompter, from the left to the right, and to the center, and back to the left, and then to the right, and they see this, and they become entranced in the technique he's using to control their minds. And yet, they're not really aware of what is going on a deeper level, that there's something going on that's causing their belief system to be further attacked and controlled, expanded in a sense, but in a negative sense. And then there are those that watch him when he's asked a question where he has to spontaneously respond to the question, and he trips all over himself. And so people sense that something is wrong, something is not right, because most of us could answer a question. It's not a question of him having stage fright. It's the disconnect from how he has been created and how he has been programmed. Now, that consciousness seems to be growing amongst people, amongst his supporters, and this is not to be a political debate or a political discussion so much as just to describe this phenomenon. The listeners out there know exactly what I'm talking about because many of them are feeling the same thing. They're watching the destruction of our country, and they're listening to the words, and the two things are not matching up. You see, we were promised change. Well, we're getting change, more of the same corruption. And we're seeing the change of the country's status, the change in the country's morals, the change in the country's ethics, and the change in the country's potential is going down the toilet. There's no doubt about that. There's not a person in this country that can tell you that this country is headed in the right direction. And so we don't have leadership, and we have to depend on ourselves. And it's going to, our success in that is going to depend on our ability to deal in real time with multidimensional realities. And I know that you have prepared some material to discuss this. I'm just giving one example of how this could be applied, but I'm facing today's issues straight on in tying it in with this topic. And we will bring up Mr. Obama again in a little bit. But I want to turn it over to you and describe some of what we're going to talk about tonight.
Well, the link that ties all this together actually extends back two or three programs ago when we were discussing the strange occurrences of Mr. and Mrs. Obama getting off the plane and having had their photographs taken, and the processing of the photographs revealed that not only did they look incorrect as they are normally perceived, but they are surrounded by, for lack of a better term, entities which appear to be residing either on them or in the field, in their life force field, very close to their person, to their bodies. And what we had talked about doing was exploring the mechanisms that are behind this phenomenon. Of course, the immediate explanation given by some people was that it was improperly processed photography. But as you pointed out in your article about it, it's pretty difficult to come to that conclusion when you can actually see distinct faces and various shapes and all kinds of unusual things. It's not just a question of the pixelation being off. If it were simply that, I doubt very much you'd see as much detail and as much diversity of these entities as had shown up. And so the real question was, what is the mechanism that could allow that to happen, and how does it all fit together with our perception of reality, and how are people who have ill intentions towards us making use of their knowledge of this phenomenon in controlling and adjusting our concepts of reality for their benefit. So those were the areas where I thought we were going to begin delving into tonight. And I guess the best way to start off would be to define what we're talking about here in a way that will allow people to follow the gist of the conversation. These fields, these energy patterns that are referred to as the morphic field, are essentially defined as an energy blueprint that affects the organization of matter. Now, because of the fact that there is a highly spiritual component to this definition with respect to the more materialistic approach to reality, it's not well received, this idea. But what's interesting about it is it's been around for many, many thousands of years, and it's been talked about in the human experience by many different groups under many different names, and it hasn't gone away. So there's a very good chance that this is a facet of reality which, like so many other things, is not accepted by the mainstream simply because they can't conceive of it or because it is so far above their own consciousness that they find it easier to poo-hoo the idea than to accept it. But be that as it may, this phenomenon has definitely been around for many, many years, and it's been explained in a number of different ways. Once a being is totally formed, whether it be a dog, a cat, a rose, or a giraffe, it doesn't make any difference. The field moves with it during the course of its life. But the more interesting aspect of all this is the relationship between a pre-existing field and the materialistic being that it helps to assemble. And that's something that actually has fascinated me for many years. And I can tell you from memory, the first time I was exposed to that idea with an explanation for it was actually when I was working with Warren Goetz. But when I was growing up in New Jersey, we had some pretty cold winters. And in our old home, we had a lot of windows. And one of the things that I used to notice was that whenever there was a frost that gathered on the windows, if you looked at it, you know, close up, you could always see patterns in the frost that looked like plant life. And you'd see ferns, and you'd see shoots of different kinds, and grasses, and other shapes, and I used to ask my parents about it, and they didn't offer any explanation. And I puzzled on that all through my adolescent years and into my early adulthood. And it wasn't until I talked to Warren Goetz that he was one of the first people that referred to this as a manifestation of the life force, which, of course, was his term for the morphogenic field. Basically, what it is that the plant life actually pre-exists the things that we refer to as plants. So you have a field structure in space, and the purpose of this is to essentially influence and guide a sprouting seed so that it literally grows into its own blueprint. And as it absorbs nutrients and whatnot from the soil, minerals and other raw materials from the soil to create the body of the plant, that plant supposedly grows into its own blueprint, which is essentially using the information in the field to direct the way in which the DNA and the genes operate on the cellular structure of the plant and determine how the material is distributed in the third dimension, our dimension. And it looks to us as if a plant is just growing, but in reality, this complicated process is literally following an energy blueprint in the development of the plant. And when there is no plant to grow in a specific spot, if there happens to be something else that is delicate enough in its very nature to be influenced by this field, then sometimes it reveals itself. And this is what happens when you have frost forming on the windows. The ice crystals actually form along the lines of whatever plant morphic field happens to be in the immediate vicinity of the pane of glass.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have always believed that this is a true phenomenon, irregardless of what you call it, and that it represents the entranceway to a higher understanding of how the world really works.
Go ahead.
I was just going to follow up by saying, because as you know, every culture that ever existed admits that there is a spiritual world as well as a physical world.
Yes, I agree. Now, in light of this blueprint, this field that the plant is adapting to, or is manifesting itself through, might be another way to describe it. We have substantiation that plants respond to humans that enter that space. In other words, the human's field and the energy patterns are perceived by the plant. And if there's an evil person or a person that's destructive, for example, the plant can feel that and it will react accordingly, right?
Oh, yeah, that's been well documented.
Okay. Now, people act the same way. In fact, I used a very basic example to show how people deduce or they sense that something's out of place when an individual cannot function in an everyday capacity, you know, responding to a normal question. I mean, you're talking about presidential material tripping all over the words and the thoughts and the concepts of answering a simple question like, do you belong to the Council on Foreign Relations? And we get a dissertation on whether the Council on Foreign Relations even exists instead of a yes or no, you see. And so people are easily led astray by some force that's unseen and present, and yet there are others that totally mistrust what's being said or can see the truth and the obvious lies behind the answer that's being given simultaneously. And so we're dealing with a morphogenic field then, are we not, at that point?
Well, not only are you dealing with that, but you're also dealing with a contradiction in perceptions. Because if I tell you verbally one thing, but the energies that are emanating from me, which you are also receiving, are telling you something else, and you can frame that any way you want to, whether it's body language or a look in a person's eye or a feeling that you have in your gut. It doesn't matter how you verbalize it. People can feel that, and when it doesn't add up to the same type of impulse that's being delivered verbally, then the tilt sign goes on in the brain, and there's a very uneasy feeling because you're getting essentially double signaling from this individual. And anybody that doesn't believe that these other forces, which are nonverbal forms of communication, exist, all you have to do is drive down the highway and glance at a person in another car, and they will always look at you almost immediately, just from a dead stare. So, you know, it's because you've directed your force field or your morphogenic field or whatever component of that field is under your immediate control is suddenly bathing the other individual's nervous system. And they almost always turn and look at you. I mean, I would say it's accurate 99% of the time.
Mm-hmm. Well, they look at you if they're not looking at the pad on their cell phone, you know, while they're dialing. that seems to interfere with that these days. I just do that. That's that 1%, I guess. but it seems like everybody I pass on the highway is talking on a cell phone, you know.
Well, that's true. I've noticed that a lot. But the ones that aren't talking usually look at you immediately.
Yeah, yes. I'm making a joke of it, of course. In terms of realities, you know, we have this reality being created for us, which is illusion, okay? And I want to get into illusion because part of my experience, and I alluded to this in the opening of this show when I described this dissatisfaction with a lot of what I'm finding out there to read. Even in the alternative media, I'm finding like people are getting caught in these ruts, and they're sort of mirroring what's going on in the mainstream media. And I used an example, not because I want to draw attention to that, other than to show people this is what you're being programmed with right now, okay? And I brought up the Michael Jackson issue. Nobody gave a hoot about Michael Jackson once he fled to the United Arab Emirates. You didn't hear anything about his music. You didn't hear anything about him. And all of a sudden, he dies, and it's the whole reality of this world now. And that's being created for people. And people should be wary of what's going on. But they get suckered into all of this drama, and it's holding them back from being who they could be. I mean, there's plenty of other things that they should be concerned about. And I can tell them, Michael Jackson's not going to feed them. He's not going to feed their families. He's not going to give them a job. He's not going to make their house payment for them. He's not going to buy the gasoline they need in their vehicles. He's not going to buy them a new vehicle. He's not going to do anything for them. And yet they so readily throw all of their being into this situation, not even questioning how this came about, you see, or why it came about. And to me, it becomes immediately clear that there's something sinister behind this, and it's being exploited, which magnifies that, you see. So people are being drawn into illusion after illusion, and then they become fearful and frantic over all the other things that are happening to them that really mean something, that really have an impact on the rest of their life. And they're not really seeking answers, are they?
See, what you just hit on, Don, is really the mechanism that allows this type of programming to work. Because let's take, for example, well, my research, and I only bring that up because I know something about it, okay? If I'm looking into really unusual aspects of electromagnetics, let's say, and I'm doing it on my own because I'm passionate about it, and I'm feeding myself with information, and I'm verifying what I'm feeding with feedback from experiments, and this is all conditioning me to have a certain perception about the validity of my work. Okay, so I am actively doing something on my own, and that action, whether it's correct or incorrect, isolates me from all this other nonsense because I'm so focused on it. So, if you have an empty head and you're not particularly focused on anything, you don't want to exert yourself to dig into the facts concerning an issue. And it doesn't matter what the issue is, whether it's the Dynaflux alternator or the demise of Michael Jackson or the real activities that are going on in Washington. It doesn't matter what it is. If you're not willing to exert yourself and make it a personal effort to put you in charge of what's influencing your own mind, so alternatively, you fall back on the news because you believe, first of all, that the news is going to be giving you truthful information. But you have put yourself in that position by that trust because you either don't have the time, the interest, or the inclination to do any research on your own, and so you rely on this external source of information. But that's only the first step in the whole process. Then all the human traits come into play. Somebody will listen to the news. They'll get a slant on a particular thing that's happening. Then they engage in conversation with somebody else, and they discuss it. They both feel very important because they are so well informed. And then what this does is it sets up a reinforcement between them, and it generates a collectively appreciated opinion about what the truth really is. And once that's established, then the media just continues to feed it. I mean, you see people that will literally go out of their way to have a newspaper every day. It doesn't matter what they have to do to get it, or else they'll turn on the news because they need that fix. But if they had the same dedication and the same passion about uncovering the truth as a result of their own efforts, then this would be a very, very different world, and it wouldn't be so easy to program people.
Yes, I agree. Now, Jim, in what gave me the desire to tackle this topic was the fact that I was working on an archive of a show that you and I did in late February, and we were talking about energy. We talked about the Big Bang theory and energy manifesting itself, and you described vortex patterns and how they were all over the universe. They were all over creation, and that these vortexes contained information. And so this information exists for a purpose, and it's available to us. It's available to us to tap into, or to just watch. I mean, we don't necessarily have to do anything with it, but in terms of expanding our consciousness and improving our lot in life, to pay attention to these things and to understand them and incorporate these principles into our life takes some effort. And I was so moved by that show. We actually did a 2-hour show on all those phenomena, and we got into some discussions about mainstream science's intent to keep us suppressed, to keep all this information suppressed, because they know a lot more than they allude to. And yet whenever anything groundbreaking comes forward, an invention in power production or some device for communication or something that could improve the quality of life, it's usually withheld from mankind until they can figure a way to attach a meter to it that they can charge people for it. And so we're missing out on so many things, and these aren't necessarily energies or information that have to be paid for. It's available to everyone for free, and it deals with an awareness of the multidimensional nature of man and nature and the animal kingdom and even the earth, but really the whole universe. Where would you like to take off and maybe explain, you know, what the basic fundamentals are of our existence here on the planet compared to all the other possibilities? And we can take them at one at a time. We don't have to jump into everything.
Well, I'm sure glad to hear that. well, actually, what you're requesting is not so difficult to relate. It actually all blends into the same subject we were just talking to. The only thing is, to clarify things a little bit, if you can imagine going back to the beginning of a planet, when it's first being created, according to this vortex theory that we were so immersed in that night, basically what happens is that you have two orgone streams which are moving through the universe, and supposedly there are an unlimited number of these streams, which are all in large and small sizes. They crisscross the universe in different angles with respect to one another and what have you, and they expand and contract almost like something is breathing. And that motion is what causes the expansion and contraction of these orbital streams. And when two of them happen to cross each other at the right angles, I don't mean 90 degrees, I mean proper angles, to allow an exchange of energy between the two, what happens, that seems to happen is that a spinning motion is set up. And it's not visible because it's some other energy form, whether it's electromagnetic or something higher, but nonetheless, it creates a strain, it creates a whirlpool of this energy in space. And as a result of that, as matter, which is in the vicinity also, dust and particles and what have you that are floating around, get sucked into this whirlpool and wind up at the middle. Just like when water is going down the drain, you can actually watch this big body of water swirling around and then all winding up being condensed into a small center of that maelstrom. The same thing happens, and after a great deal of time, the particles or the material that's gathered by this vortex coalesces into a planetary body. And since it's still in the whirlpool, it's given a certain amount of motion by that effect. And now you've got a planet that's beginning to form. And of course, I'm not a geologist or anything, but, you know, once it's big enough and the temperature inside, is high enough from these, what you could basically refer to as eddy currents flowing through it, now it starts to outgas and produces an atmosphere, and all these other things happen. And sooner or later, the same orgone that was flowing to cause the vortex to begin with eventually animates material and causes the formation of life, et cetera, et cetera. So now you have a planet that's populated with various species after millions of years go by, and this mechanism has run its creational course. And the thing that's interesting is that as these different species go through their existences, apparently their spiritual component, upon their demise, makes a contribution to the modulation of this whirlpool. And when another member of that species comes into existence, it's linked back to that that modulation, we'll call it, by a form of resonance where the one field is still in touch with the other field, and so there's an exchange of information between the experiences of an earlier member of a given species and the new critter. And so there's a constantly building database, if you want to call it that, of information that winds up determining habits and behavior of a given species over a period of time. And of course, it's very plastic. It will evolve as conditions change and the species has to undergo what we refer to as evolution, so also does the morphic field associated with it. So now when we get to the human experience, there's no reason why the same thing can't be going on. And so as a result of that, we have referred to this phenomenon with respect to our existence as the Akashic Record, because in that is the total sum of all of the experiences of man since he first became man, however that was accomplished, until the present day. And so our species has the ability to tap into this knowingly or unknowingly and get inspirations and guidance and ideas and also more rudimentary things, you know, like information about the weather, information about what to eat and what not to eat. Those kinds of things are all laden in that enormous database and can be tapped into. Now, what's interesting is that primitive man and also so-called uncivilized man does this instinctively. And when that mechanism is not interfered with, the result is what we call instinct. So actually, instinct in itself is proof of reincarnation because, in a sense, there is a part of the previous existence of the whole species which survives and gives guidance and information to each new member. And this gestalt demonstrates a constant interplay between the material beings that are living in these bodies, which are also, the development of which are also dictated by morphic fields, and prior individuals that have lived a lifetime and surrendered their lifelong experiences to this collective field, and we can rely on that for a number of different things. Now, in the animal kingdom, a perfect example of that is, we take a rabbit that's out grazing in a big field, and he will instinctively eat just grasses and dandelions and flowers and things that he knows are good for him. And yet growing in that same field might be poisonous plants, and he has no problem to avoid those. Now, the interesting thing is you take that same rabbit, put him in a cage for a few months, feed him those stupid rabbit pellets for a while, which will totally destroy his coupling to his own morphic field or his own Akashic reference table. And now you can take one of the poisonous plants that he would have avoided on a daily basis and put it in his cage, and he'll eat it and die. And that's been done many times, that experiment. It's true. It's valid. And what's interesting about the parallel that I'm trying to develop here is that by putting individuals on the earth in artificial environments like cities and other planned environments for us and subjecting them to rules and regulations which are totally unnatural, you accomplish the same thing. You decouple the person from the gestalt of the total field, and he's no longer receiving that information the way he would have been naturally, so there's no underlining guidance. But now you replace that guidance with an artificially transmitted set of information, rules, news, etc., through artificial devices like radio and television and telephone and telegraph and whatever other thing you want to throw in there. And now you've got a person totally decoupled from his natural higher self, who is still craving information, and now you feed that information artificially, and once that's accomplished at a very young age and he becomes reliant upon the artificial device, you've got him caught in the program trap pretty much for life.
Now,
unless he gets his own consciousness riled up to the point where he realizes that there's something wrong, and you pointed out that that's beginning to happen quite a bit.
Yeah, in spite of these artificial fields that are created, this information coming down through these vortices, these universal vortices, we're saying that exist naturally in nature, and according to universal law, there has to be at some point a dissonance when the two frequencies, the one at which one's consciousness is under the influence of these control mechanisms, electromagnetic radiation and what have you, drugs and genetically modified food, pollution, and thought patterns that are not creative but are destructive, all of these things tend to pull the base frequency of each individual down intentionally. They're designed to do that, and to shut off the aspects of the spiral, the helix, double helix of DNA. Now, humans having 12 helixes would say that we have a potential to rise above this, wouldn't we? And lacking those who lack the spiritual components to be able to even accomplish awakening those aspects of themselves, they wouldn't succeed forever in holding us back, would they?
Well, I think that depends a lot on the individual. I mean, I've seen in my own lifetime people that I had never dreamt would go anywhere, and under the right circumstances, they flower. So, you know, it depends entirely on what they decide they want to do with themselves. Each of us has the ability to do that. But what's more interesting is what happens to those people who really don't do anything one way or the other, and they just continue to go along with the program. Mm-hmm. Now, as things get worse and worse, which is happening now, the disconnect or the dichotomy between what's being fed to them through the program channels versus what their higher self is trying to tell them becomes more and more pronounced. And they may not get the idea of, on a conscious level, of what it is that makes them feel uncomfortable. But generally speaking, this leads to neurotic behavior and an overall feeling of dread, fear, uneasiness, you know, that gnawing sensation that something's wrong and they don't know what it is. Well, that's what's wrong. The fact that one channel is telling them one thing and the other channel is telling them the other.
Yeah, in examining those methods that are used to bring about the circumstances, I'm speaking about the programs, and those that put forth these programs, those that create them, design them, plan them, and then administer them through either themselves or through their agents, it's become increasingly apparent to me and to many others, likely to you, that not only is this intentionally being done for the purpose of maintaining control and power over the masses, but it's gone beyond this natural balance of God's dichotomies. You know, you can't have hot without cold. You can't have large without small. You can't have good without evil, and yet the intent was always to keep a balance between them, that one could make a choice between the two. Hopefully they would make the choice that would propel them upward in consciousness rather than going backwards in unconsciousness and deeper in debt, karmically speaking. And so it's gotten to the point, my perception is that it's gotten to the point where where these individuals that design these programs and enforce them, carry them out themselves or through their agents, and use a variety of means to control it. Usually it's money or fear, the threat of being killed or imprisoned or penalized in some way. This is, in their sense, replacing God. It's the dichotomy of God. And if they can make it so all-encompassing and all-powerful, they are under the illusion that this will surpass God. It will become greater than God. And so they are creating a false God based on illusion, based on all of this corruption and this violation of universal principles. And yet so many have fallen into that trap, despite the fact that all these other phenomena are going on. That's the point I'm trying to make, is that there's something else going on, and there are people waking up, and there are people sensing this. Do you think, I know your answer, but I have to ask it anyway. Do you think you are witnessing, or we are witnessing, a change in people's DNA or their ability to grasp these higher concepts because we are maybe being prompted to enter into a morphogenic field of a higher vibration?
Well, something is definitely happening in our galaxy. And a friend of mine and I were talking about it just the other day. Just like each planet relative to its own sun has a day and a night, so also does the central sun of the galaxy with respect to various solar systems produce an effect like day and night. And I think that one of the things associated with this whole concept of 2012 is the fact that by the time that date rolls around that everybody is concerned about, what it's going to really mean is that our solar system will be in a position that it hasn't been in for 25,000 years, and it will start to be exposed to radiations from the central sun of the galaxy, which corresponds to galactic day. And with that will come higher vibrations. And those individuals who are more evolved or more sensitive or working towards higher consciousness will feel a huge boost, which will affect their response to this galactic daytime.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're going to ever break free of this 5,000-year-old tradition of being under the control of whoever the negative individuals are on this planet who are arranging all this programming for the race and for themselves, this would be a good time to do it. And there's another thing that's happening too, which is very interesting. I've lived long enough already to have witnessed this phenomenon in a number of instances. And I'll use the tugboat industry as an example. Back around World War I, a certain family in New York worked their tails off and bought two or three old boats, refurbished them, put them in business in New York Harbor, built that up into a company. By the time World War II came along, they were a very sizable company doing a lot of work. And then that was the end of the first generation. Then the second generation took over, and they already had a going company, so they weren't quite as ambitious as their forefathers, but they did a pretty good job of it. And then the third generation and the fourth generation were successively worse. And the business dropped off. The attitudes about discipline and dedication to the company changed. So So there seems to be a natural declination associated with progressive generations in association with any particular enterprise. And what I've noticed is that even the so-called elite that run the planet seem to be undergoing a similar degeneration, because the earlier guys who were in control worked really hard to set everything up that way, and they ruled with an iron fist. And the next generation was a little bit less, and now we're actually getting into a generation of those elite, which take everything for granted that it's just going to continue on the way it was. And they're not as polished, they're not as refined, they don't understand the details of even their own business the way their forefathers did, and it shows up. I mean, a perfect example of it is the last president that we had. I mean, that guy was nowhere. And yet he descends from the same family that, you know, has very ruthless connections back to the Nazis in the Third Reich. And you know how that goes. You wrote about it and investigated it yourself. So I think we have two things happening here. We have a general increase in overall consciousness and awareness, which represents a curve that's slowly beginning to move upward. And we also have a loosening of the reins due to incompetence, if you want to call it that, familiarity, contempt, and laziness on part of the elite, which is coming down in the opposite direction. And the crisscross effect of this is going to cause, you know, a very big change when enough time goes by. And I think we're already seeing the hallmarks of that right now.
Mm-hmm.
And
those self-described elite underestimated the capacity for many to be outside the box, so to speak, and to recognize what it is they do. And I think they have become very paranoid about losing grip, and I think they are losing grip. Their world is falling apart on a multiplicity of levels. This brings us back to our topic, too, in that these things that are going on, which they deal with in terms of their alchemy, their black magic, you know, their rituals, which is all they know, because you've got to lack a spirit and a genuine conscience about what you do to others, and their solution is just to murder or do away by any means with those that either disagree with them or those that are going to be an impediment to their goals. Now, they may be very aware that they're violating universal law, but at the same time, they could give a damn about it. You know, the fact that they're so brazen and arrogant in what they do shows that they are actually fearful and ignorant, because you can't be this elite that they think they are and be so stupid at the same time. They may have money, but that doesn't make them smart. That makes them shrewd, or that makes them conniving. It doesn't necessarily point out that they have any special intelligence beyond anyone else. They're just extremely devious, and they devote all of their time to that, which is a clue to us, because if we devote all of our time to learning the truth is going to keep casting light on their darkness. And all the lies, as they are now, are being revealed, and they'll continue to be revealed. Ultimately, people are going to have to take responsibility, aren't they? again, that topic comes up.
Well, it has to come up, because without responsibility, there can be no spiritual evolution. That's obvious. You know, it's like, okay, I want to learn mathematics. So your dad goes out and buys you 20 or 30 books on math from, introductory arithmetic right on up to, advanced differential equations. And they're all sitting there on the dining room table, and you're watching TV.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't get off your buns and go and start studying the stuff and working problems, doesn't make any difference whether the books are there or not. You're not going to learn anything. So the same is true with all avenues of life. You know, you have to have initiative. You have to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm not concerned with the risk. I'm not interested in other people's opinion. I'm going to do it. And it's those people that excel. You know, most people are so concerned about failing that they fail.
Yeah.
You know, that's really what it boils down to, you know.
That's where they focus their attention, you know.
Yeah. Oh, gee, what if it doesn't work? Well, so what? Then you do something else.
Yeah. Now, at the top of the show, I alluded to, or you alluded to these photos. I had been studying the Barack Obama photos in terms of discernment, looking logically at this issue of if a person's documentation is absent or that which he brings forth is fraudulent, then what about the person is real? What, is there any truth behind anything said or written about the person or anything the person he or herself brings forth for public consumption? So I began looking at the photos, and I began noticing very strange things in the photos. Beyond the fact that they were fraudulent, I began noticing entities in the photos. And I certainly have the experience to attach those entities to certain vibratory levels in the overall spectrum of dimensionality. And I see these entities that thrive on certain conditions, absence of light, or entities that are drawn to people whose etheric bodies have holes in them, or their aura having a hole in it where it's devoid of light, it's got an opening, it's much like having a mosquito net with holes in it. Don't be surprised if you get bitten by mosquitoes. Well, in these individuals, the entities reside on the body like parasites. And based on their overall vibratory level, this can be thousands of these entities, and it shows up in photographs. It showed up in a photograph that Ken Adachi received. Ken wrote a story on it. Ken analyzed the photos. We both looked at them together and spotted all of these entities. These are not digital artifacts, as one professional photographer challenged Ken, that when you magnify these photos that you're seeing digital artifacts, noise in the picture, phenomena that occur because of all these unnatural situations, reflected light and this and that. But in reality, what happened is the conditions were appropriate for showing the anomalies in these pictures. Now, that's beyond a lot of people's understanding. People aren't ready to accept certain things as a reality, and that's perfectly fine. No one's passing judgment on them. But that doesn't give them the right to attack those that understand what is going on. And Ken responded to this particular individual in a very polite and methodical way, describing the phenomenon that occur when you are dealing with entities that are moving from another dimension into this dimension. For whatever purpose they're doing that, they tend to be attracted to the same types of energy. And Ken pointed out to this photographer that faces are not considered digital artifacts. These beings, these entities, take on the appearance of animals and humans, and these are not accidents. These are not optical illusions. The photo itself is an illusion, but what's contained in it is not, in that sense. And certainly the fabricated, fraudulent photos are illusions, and people readily accept these as representations of the truth. So we have all different levels of folks, all different levels of consciousness, observing and examining these pictures and deducing what these pictures represent to them. But ultimately, there's only one truth, isn't there? Despite what we all see or we all don't see, there's one basic truth.
Well, there's one truth, but unfortunately, depending on the level of achievement of the individual who's attempting to discern that truth, he may only see part of it. You know, it's kind of like the 10 blind guys that are examining the elephant. You know, they're all convinced that the elephant is something different. You know, one guy's touching the trunk, one guy's touching a tusk, one guy's touching his tail, one guy's touching a leg. You know, and one guy's touching an ear. You know, they all have a different idea about the thing, and yet if they were to pool their information, they'd get a better picture of what the truth is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the interesting thing is the same thing is going on here. In order to really understand what's happening, you have to kind of roll back a ways and examine the way the universe is set up. Now, we were talking earlier about how these morphogenic fields affect plants and how plants grow into their own blueprint, so to speak. Well, the interesting thing is, so do animals. So do other forms of entities throughout the universe. And as a result of that, they have a morphic field which is particular to whatever they are, whether it's a rabbit or a T-Rex. And so the thing that we want to remember is those fields, let's restrict our argument to the animal world, they are representative of animals before they grow a body. And so they have a lot of the characteristics of animals, one of which is they can move around. They're not anchored in one area like the morphogenic fields of plants. As a matter of fact, in Atlantis, they used to use that concept for various scientific pursuits. They had the ability to grow an artificial brain, for instance, that would be the brain of an elephant, but then they would put it into a mechanical body. And the interesting thing is the morphogenic field of the elephant would immediately see an opening in our domain and enter into that, and now they would have essentially a mechanical elephant driven by the animal spirit of that elephant. And they wouldn't have to program it, because as long as it was built in the likeness of an elephant, the morphogenic field through the artificial brain could then control it just like an elephant. And then they would control the machine by, you know, various hydraulic or electrical means, which is analogous to a guy sitting on the back of an elephant, jabbing him with a spur, or, you know, hitting them with a little prop. And, you know, it would respond accordingly. Well, the other thing that's important to realize is this area has actually been explored. If you read the Tibetan Book of the Dead, there are many of these monks who spend years perfecting the ability to leave their body and wander around in their astral state and examine all this stuff. And they will tell you, if you read that stuff, that in these regions are all of these unusual animals and entities of all sorts that occupy the various levels of existence, you know, from the earth level, the fundamental level, right up to angels and into the domain of divinity. And they're all represented by different frequencies. So these people have seen this stuff and they've written about it. And of course in our world, we know better, so it can't be acceptable. But the lower level of those entities, whatever they may be, the animal forms, the faces of goblins and other things which are perceived from time to time, they can rupture through when the field is right. Just like the frost on the windshield, or the window pane, gives you the impression that there's a plant growing there when in fact it's just ice forming in these lines. If you have an entity that finds some sort of resonance with the lower vibration of a being whose aura is appropriate, it will come into that space. And you may not see it with your eyes, but the photographic paper is influenced by that field, and the molecular crystals on the paper pick up these images, just like the frost on the window does. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you see these things poking through. Actually, the same thing happens in the higher realms too. The problem is you don't usually hear about that because mm-hmm. the events are isolated, but people have actually caught pictures of angels protecting children and loving entities being in the room, like sometimes a departed person that shows up, you know, to be with his family and feel their vibrations again. You know, these things happen also. So, I mean, the world is a much more complex and a much more rich experience than people are willing to admit, especially the ones who are so programmed that they can't get out of their own way.
Well, you know, while I'm listening to you, I'm getting this image of those who create war. And I see war as nothing but a means through which to be destructive, totally destructive. I mean, it's about destroying life, accumulating wealth through the theft of what belongs to others, and really it belongs to the whole. But in their greed and their lust for power, those that plan and execute wars, they usually use others to carry out their deeds. Again, they lack the courage to do it themselves. They have to put others out there to take the risk because they also find some glee in their demise as well, even though those that act as agents for them. It's very easy to look at war and see how opposite, how dichotomous it is to the creation and to what is good. And yet so many feel that it's justified under some means. Even when we discover that it was all under false pretenses, that we were lied to about the reasons why we went to Iraq, not once, but twice, or why we are in Afghanistan, or why there's this war on terror, which is really the terrorists are the governments and those perpetrating all of these horrific acts upon the rest of humanity in violation of universal law. I mean, it doesn't take a genius to see that that's what's going on. And yet we all in our passivity, in our apathy and our, allowance of these things, we are, in a sense, co-creating along with this. You know, we're condoning all of this or justifying it on some level. There is no justification for the taking of life on any level, whether it's the guy that commits the first crime or it's the government coming in to punish that person. Ultimately, that would be left to the creator. I think we continuously interfere with the master plan. And that is the reason for mankind's demise.
Well, absolutely. And the key phrase to remember in that regard is, war is a racket. And part of the programming that we've all been exposed to is the feeling of patriotism. And I'm not saying patriotism is wrong. There are times when it's much required. But the point is that it can be distorted. And off they go, you know, following the laws of patriotism because some guy in Washington said, oh, we have to go attack these people now. You know, the interesting thing is, If they all said no, what would happen? There wouldn't be a war. You know, who is this guy that points and says, let's invade that country, you know, let's do this or that? Who are these people that make these decisions anyway? You know, that gets right back to where we were before. You have to take your own initiative. You have to decide, is this a real situation? Is this something that, you know, that I really want to be engaged in? But you see, they don't do that because they're still relying on the artificial programming devices, the media, the news, the propaganda of newspapers, and nobody gets the big picture. And the big picture is that it's all contrived to cull the herds and to make a buck. And part of the reason why people don't get it is because it's so horrible a thought that we can send millions to their deaths just so the elite can put money in the bank that most people just refuse to accept it. They'll say, no, it can't be that, so the other has to be true because it's more realistic. No, there are no monsters that bad. There are no people that would sit and plan the massacre of millions and the destruction of cities and all the horrors that go along with a full-fledged war. Mm-hmm. So therefore it can't be that. That's not the right explanation. And then they fall right back into the programming.
Yes. And then you have this even in a spiritual sense, and I don't necessarily equate religion and spirituality, especially the way religion is handled today. These promises to people that if they follow a certain path and give a certain percentage of their income to an organization that acts as the middleman between them and God, that they will be raptured or they will be rescued miraculously. But there's never any consideration for what they do to earn that, if that were even possible, let's put it that way. There are people, especially based on the call that you and I got on May 29th from the Galactic Federation, from the United Galactic Federation, where it was pointed out very succinctly at the outset of the conversation with General Jeremiah that this planet is not quite ready yet to be catapulted into a level of higher consciousness where people love each other and care for one another. We haven't learned that lesson down here, and as long as we follow those that are leading us down the wrong path, we will not collectively learn that lesson, will we?
No, we won't. But as far as the whole religious theme goes, without pointing a finger at any particular religious dogma, I will tell you this. As far as my own destiny, my own ultimate destiny is concerned, I will rely on the information coming from my morphic field, and I will assume that I can have a personal relationship with the deity, and that I will proceed along those lines, both in the actions that I do in everyday life, and the opinions that I hold, and I will not be swayed by concerns from any dogma regarding, you know, such ludicrous concepts as, you know, eternal damnation and things of that sort. And I will place myself in the hands of the Creator when it comes to time for me to leave this earth. And I'll do so in the full faith that, that I got nothing to worry about, that things will unfold as they are designed to do so. And, I just feel badly for people that are so terrified or so seduced by, various dogmas that they actually run amok in the course of their lives, simply because they want to do the right thing by way of what they're taught to believe.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've had a similar conversation with many, I guess you could call them, you know, metaphysicians, and they're in agreement that that there are changes going on, and that we're given an opportunity to receive this higher vibratory information based upon, I guess, our willingness to acknowledge that it's even there. I mean, that's part of the first step. And then really by weighing what's going on currently around the planet against what we would intend, should we be in control of these things. And in a sense, we're responsible for ourselves, so we are in control as long as we're pursuing that. It's when we wait for the other guy to do something first, which is where we err. And I see a lot of people doing that. They're just waiting for the other person to make the first move. I got a chat message early in the show tonight. Someone was asking about lead poisoning. I don't know what they want to hear about the fact that I don't know if they have lead poisoning or, you know, What do you tell someone? Go see a doctor. At that point, I would say, see a specialist. This person dropped their oregano in a lake. Well, my first suggestion would be, don't take oregano to the lake, and you won't drop it. But I don't know. And then this person gave their iodine away, and they don't have any sea salt. How do you respond to such, this person is asking for advice. How do you respond to such a request?
Is this one person asking three different things or three people asking?
Well, they're asking basically for advice on lead poisoning, but they've dropped their oregano. It's not even saying oregano oil, it's just saying oregano. Into a lake, they've given their iodine away, and they don't have any sea salt. I guess buy a Snickers and just go on with life. I don't know. I don't know what to say.
I wouldn't even address the issue. I mean, the whole show, it's a perfect example of what not to do. I mean, the whole show was an attempt to call attention to the fact that there are higher things to aspire to, and here's somebody asking about lead poisoning and oregano, which are basically common sense everyday issues.
Mm-hmm.
So if they can't address those issues, they might as well not listen to the show.
Yeah. I just got a message from Seth that this person was also hoping that another guest, actually Dr. K, you know him, would be on tonight. Now, Jim, you've been on my schedule for a month. You've been my Friday night guest for 2 years. I mean, it's self-explanatory. There's what we're talking about tonight. People are listening, they're tuning in, but they're not hearing. They're not paying attention at all. And they're looking for someone else to provide the answer. I would almost have to say that was just a prank call. You know? I mean, you can't take it seriously.
I wouldn't.
And so my advice would be, go see a doctor. Now, the kind of doctor you see, that's up to you at this point. Well, in closing, we've got a wrap here. And I'm sure we can explore this more. There's a lot to talk about in this area. But we've touched upon a lot of different concepts. And this is definitely something going on, whether anyone acknowledges it or not. Things are changing. There's information coming to this planet in a variety of forms, in a variety of frequencies. And it's affecting nature. It's affecting the planet itself, the animal kingdom. And of course, nature and the animal kingdom and humanity are all fighting the sinister things that are going on, too. Surely, just with our intention and focusing on alternative outcomes, we can affect this, can't we?
Well, sure, you can affect it one way or the other. I mean, don't tell me that people are so spaced out, or spaced in, might be a better explanation, that they don't notice the weather lately. I mean, things are changing. And the irony of it is, we keep on telling them that the planet is a conscious entity and that it responds to what's happening on its body. And it's for the same reason. You know, you have an average morphic field that's the product of billions and billions of individuals and how they think and how they behave on the Earth. And there's the vortex that holds the planet together, which is also a part of that same field. And people don't understand that just like you can have a person with a green thumb who can make plants grow, you can have a person with a black thumb that when they go near plants, it has the opposite effect. Well, the same is true of the planet. If everything is operating in harmony, you'll have a beautiful world. If everything is in discord, you're going to get to the point where the planet is going to say, you know what? I don't need the grief. Humanity is expendable.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't amount to a hill of beans either. You know, only our arrogance gives us the illusion that this cannot happen, that we are the best species on the world. It's ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's actually happened many times before. I mean, there's enough records throughout the world that if people take the gumption to examine them, the world has been destroyed at least 5 times, and we could be batting for number 6.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that in closing that illusion is something unique to the third dimension and probably doesn't exist anywhere else?
Well, I think you're outside my realm of expertise on that one. But if you resort to age-old legends that talk about the clash between the deity and other entities that we now refer to as demonic, then the answer to your question is no, it's not limited just to this plane, because these other entities can delude themselves into thinking that they are better than God, just like certain creatures here on Earth do. So there, I think illusion is a product of consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, yeah. In the sense, now maybe in those other dimensions, they don't hold the same power that they do down here. They have to come down to this base frequency in the third dimension to exercise the amount of chaos that they do. I would think in higher realms that they've more than met their match.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, Jim, we're out of time. It's been interesting. I hope you got to cover some things that you wanted to cover. I feel that we did. And I look forward to your next appearance next week, next Friday, on Evident Footprints.
Well, I intend to be here. Let's put it that way.
Okay. You have a great weekend. Time to say goodnight to the listening audience. Folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and our special guest, scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, Mr. Jim Murray. Jim will be back next Friday. Don't take your oregano to the lake. That's my recommendation over the weekend. I can't believe I said that. Special thanks go out to Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join us again next Monday when we have some more great guests lined up for us.
I'm Patricia Cota Robles, and I'm the host of Awaken Your Divine Potential, which airs on Tuesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. This is a unique moment on planet Earth, and people everywhere are reaching out and asking for guidance and assistance from on high. As a result of humanity's heartfelt pleas, we are receiving more assistance than ever before from our Father, Mother, God, and the company of heaven. The information I share on my weekly radio program is being given to humanity by the beings of light in the realms of illumined truth. The divine intent of these celestial sharings is to encourage, empower, inspire, and uplift all of us by allowing us to see the bigger picture during these wondrous but often challenging times. Please join me for this commercial-free hour, during which time we will join hearts and minds with thousands of light workers all over the planet. Together we will invoke the company of heaven and add to the light of the world.